Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts for today are Gina McAndrews and I, Susan Franzen, with Paul Wearson joining us for our Wednesday membership drive program. Inspired by Tuesday's program, which gave listeners previews of some of the shows to follow through the morning and afternoon, I thought we should give our listeners a preview of what's coming up today.
And what might that be, Susan? Do you have any favorite shows on Wednesday morning and afternoon and evening?
Yes, some of my favorite shows. And now I'd like to give them a little publicity, especially for listeners who can listen to them now when they may be at home more. When I used to edit the 7 a.m. show for noon at the Pantorium, the radio was naturally tuned to 89.1. So I listened to everything from Democracy Now! Through three music programs. And Democracy Now! I found was really wonderful for keeping up with the news in a way that was a little different from other shows that were available throughout the afternoon and evening. Although the three music programs were very different, I discovered that they had a wonderful variety of music, and I liked it all.
You did? What kind of music was that?
Well, it's a nice mix of my favorites, from Baroque and Beyond with Michael White, which is a syndicated show, meaning it's produced elsewhere. The 10 o'clock show is a KHOI original by our own John Bassert, called Hot Jazz Review. It's a lot of Dixieland. It's funny because I never paid much attention to Dixieland until I listened to it. I got to know John Bassert a little because he also had a jazz combo called the Dixie Chicks, and I learned about that where they were performing. And of course, I'd occasionally meet him as he came in to work on his show while I was working on mine. Ursula Rudenberg recognized the quality of the show and showed John how to syndicate it. I just asked him how many other stations carried it, and he told me 10 or 12.
Wow, that's terrific. How did we get someone like that at KHOI?
John Bassert had retired from the ISU music department and just loved to play music. This is one of the things I really enjoy about KHOI. The volunteers can do programs that have little or nothing to do with their profession, but they are about, popularly called, their passion, what they really love to do. For instance, Bob Anders, famous for Bob's 8-track garage sale, was a banker.
That's interesting. Yeah, he's a lot of fun and does a great show. What's the Mop Tops and the King?
Well, that's interesting. Can you guess what Mop Tops and the King stands for?
I better not even try.
Well, when they first were on the air, the Mop Tops were the Beatles. People called them the Mop Tops because they had long hair. And the King, well, he's still called the King, Elvis Presley. And I thought that was a pretty odd combination. I was crazy about the Beatles back in the 60s. I played them all the time. My children played them all the time. And then later, my grandchildren, would, when their father was playing music for them, he'd play Beatles songs. So I was meant to like that. And Elvis Presley, I had not ever liked when he was really popular. But somehow it went well with the Beatles, the way Steve Chamsford does it. And I'll tell you a little bit about Steve Chamsford. I got to know Steve Chamsford through the fun drive, because when we could be back in the studio, we would break into the syndicated shows and talk to the people. And Steve Chamsford loved to do this and tell people his story, how he got started. So I'll tell you what is on his website describing Mop Tops and the King. We are an independent weekly one-hour radio show featuring the music of the Beatles and Elvis Presley with some fun surprises in between. Our goal is to spread a little joy and happiness to the entire world, one listener at a time, through the music of Elvis and the Beatles. We strive to keep the show entertaining and fun. Please check us out. And then he goes on, the Mop Tops and the King has been on the air since December 2011. Steve Chelmsford is the host and producer of Mop Tops and the King and has been a fan of the Beatles and Elvis Presley since he was 3 years old. Steve got his start in radio when he met Dusty Fenders, a local radio personality on Radio Goldfield, a small community radio station in the middle of the Nevada desert. Steve developed a friendship with Dusty and his radio partner, Carl Brownfield, and soon became a member of the Carl and Dusty Radio Boogie, writing jingles and other musical pieces. About a year later, Radio Greenfield, KGFN 89.1, and that's an interesting coincidence, asked Steve if he would be interested in having his own show. The Mop Tops and the King made its debut on December 4th, 2011, and is currently heard in the USA, the UK, Australia, Belgium, Bolivia, Kenya, South Africa, the Netherlands, and the Philippines. Over 70 community radio stations in total. In a previous life, Steve was a research engineer with the Air Force Research Laboratory for nearly 30 years. He is a lifelong resident of Chelmsford, Massachusetts. Steve took a very personal interest in KHOI. He even did a special program for one of our pledge drives a few years ago. Then, when we had a Beatles tribute band for the Pantorium sessions, we sent him some songs to play on his program. He likes to play Beatles covers. Also, I suppose, Elvis covers.
Wow, he sounds like quite an interesting person. I'd like to hear some of his music.
Well, you're in luck. Here's the Beatles tribute band, Rocky Raccoon, playing Sgt. Pepper.
Was a pretty good tribute band.
Yes, and something I've never seen before at the Pantorium sessions. Everybody was standing up and dancing, pushing the chairs out of the way.
How are we doing Pantorium sessions during COVID-19?
We had two scheduled on the stage at CY Stevens, but COVID-19 is interfering with more than the location. As of this morning, I just got a call. Both of them have been canceled. The Prairie Lions, which was to have been tonight, the 18th, and Stranger Than Fiction, which would have been on the 21st. Musicians are either quarantined or have COVID.
Wow, that's really a bummer. What about the noon local talk show?
Well, as you may recall, last March, when the pandemic first hit and KHOI became the COVID relief hotline. Our motto became, KHOI is here for you. What a relief. And so we tried to do some special programming, a lot of it informational about the various health recommendations, how to get tested, and the various ways that people were coping throughout our listening area, schools in particular. And then more recently, how institutions and businesses have continued or even built things during this period, like Nevada's Main Street. But one of the things that the Ames Public Library did was to develop a program called Reading Radio for the children who were out of school. This lasted perhaps longer than they expected, but Reading Radio is a couple of librarians reading children's books that are particularly selected to be good for this time, soothing. And I think that's still worth tuning in. If you have children and they're listening to it, I bet a lot of parents are sitting down with them to listen to Reading Radio. Well, it was changed when the pandemic hit last spring and children were out of school. So, you know, we don't have a local talk show to broadcast at noon. I mean, we could broadcast it at noon, but the Ames Public Library started a children's story time called Reading Radio. I just listened to it to last week's show, and it was charming. I wanted to stay and hear the whole thing because it was so delightful. And the membership drive slogan that they were talking about is also charming. KHOI is here for you. What a relief.
That is good. What is it supposed to mean?
Well, let's ask Paul what he thinks. He hasn't had much chance to say anything so far. Paul?
I'm here on my phone at the family farm. Still locked in the 20th century, but thankfully I could be present on the Zoom by phone. And of course, KHOI is so unique. You know, it's a local radio station where there aren't many nowadays. So KHOI plays a unique role, not only in Ames, but in the surrounding communities. And that's what Susan and I have had fun doing, because on Wednesday, we've traveled to all kinds of communities and talked to mayors and highlighted festivals and community theater and, well, all the goings on in the communities in our listening area. And it's really hooked us into people in these towns and the people doing things in those towns. And it's always the movers and shakers in these towns that we communicate with and interact with. And it's been great fun and really interesting and enlightening, because we kind of focus on our own communities, and this gets us out into some other communities around the listening area. And KHOI is really unique in that respect, and that's why it's important to keep KHOI alive, because we are a rare entity, and we are local, and we are pertinent to what's going on in the area, as well as a conveyance for all the programs you mentioned that are syndicated. And just a reminder that this is the Fun Drive time. A basic membership is $60 a year. That's pretty low. Household membership, $100. A major donor, $1,000. And a sustaining member, those are folks who do their regular donations through their bank account and help KHOI on a regular and predictable basis. And you can donate by, well, our number is 515-292-2878. Or you can go to khoifm.org and push the yellow donate membership button. So that's a way to make sure KHOI continues and we can continue to do the things that uniquely we can do. What do you think, Susan?
I think that's absolutely right. And I'm glad to have you back to remind our listeners of those details, because as you so aptly say, that's what we need to stay on the air. I would like to talk about one more show that is a regular, and our listeners may listen to this. I always used to listen to it when I was driving home from KHOI, when I used to edit the show for noon, because this is a community bookshelf
hosted by Mary Richards. And I think now with a lot of assistance from Mary Howard, it's her responsibility to locate the readers. We have a variety of readers. Sometimes people read their own books, and sometimes they are just reliably available. Mary Richards used to do most of the reading. I think now Mary Howard does a lot. The story that's being read now is read by Brian Dudley.
And the rule on Peak Community Bookshelf is that the books are written by people in our listening area. They're not always published in our listening area. Of course, getting permission to read a published book on the air is sometimes difficult. And it was one of the problems that the legendary Doug Brown used to have, getting permissions to read. And he read, you know, current books. And sometimes we read current books, but they're not from Random House. And in fact, we did have one that was interrupted. We couldn't read it because it was published by University of Minnesota Press. And they wouldn't allow it, even though it was by a local author about his personal experiences in a Japanese internment camp. But this one is appropriate for right now, where it's KHOI is on the air. What a relief. The book is Griff, My Life as Drake's Top Dog by Gary Porter, read by Brian Dudley. This book tells the story of Griff, Drake University's live mascot, from cheering on the sports team to collecting donations for his pet food drive, working as a therapy dog, and even campaigning for president, all from his own unique perspective. I wonder if Cy is ever going to write his autobiography.
In case you've just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And your hosts today are Gina McAndrews, Paul Wierson, and Susan Franzen. So far, we've been introducing the variety of shows that air following Local Talk from 7 to 8
a.m.
Our next guest will be Ed Fallon, whose show, The Fallon Forum, has been airing at 4 p.m. every Wednesday since shortly after we went on the air. To introduce Ed, I'd like to play a selection from an earlier Local Talk show telling about his epic journey, The Great Climate March.
This is kind of the central message in the book, and it all kind of came together as me and one of the other marchers, Steve Martin, were walking across New Mexico. Here's what I wrote. After marching close to 1,000 miles through three states, my walking stick has become an essential companion. In addition to what I learned while training, I've become skilled in using it for balance, especially when walking through ravines or on sloping shoulders of gravel. In cities, I use it to push walk buttons, saving a few strides at road crossings. In rural areas, I use it to fling roadkill off highways. My walking stick also becomes an important part of the story I share with people I meet. One day, Steve and I ran out of water. "Look, there's a farmhouse ahead," I said. "First one we've seen in miles, and likely the last one we'll see before we die of thirst." "Nah," says Steve, "let's keep going. I don't want to bother the guy. We'll make it." "Okay," I say, you keep going, and I'll throw dirt over your parched corpse when I find you up the road later today." "Hello," I shout as we get close to the barn. A wiry, weathered Latino man, a bit older than me, steps out. "We're walking across the country," I say, "and we've run out of water. Would you happen to have a bit to spare?" "Sure," he said. "Walking across the country, what for?" he asked as he unkinked a hose to fill our bottles. "We're trying to get people to understand that we have to do something about climate change," I say. The farmer nodded his head and asked, "How far do you walk in a day?" "Oh, we've probably averaged 16 miles or so," I said. "Today we've got 18 to tackle." The farmer looked at my walking stick and said, "That's a good hike. I bet that stick helps." "It sure does," I affirmed. "It reminds me of my dad, who died of cancer a few years back. His coffin was made from the same forest that grew the wood for this walking stick." The farmer seemed genuinely interested, so I continued. "My dad used to tell me what it was like growing up in the Bronx during World War II, the son of Irish immigrants. Military experts warned of the horrible things happening in Europe and in the South Pacific. But our leaders just sat on their hands. Eventually, America woke up, and everybody did their part. My dad would go down to the railroad tracks and collect tin foil from cigarette boxes for the scrap metal drive." "Yeah," said the farmer. "My father fought in World War II. I was born a year after it ended, in fact. Not a coincidence, I guess," he said, smiling. "My dad, your dad, everyone got involved," I said. "As a nation, we retooled an entire economy in just a matter of months. We defeated fascism, and who knows what the world would look like today if we hadn't. There was a pause in the conversation as the farmer handed back our water bottles. We thanked him. "Well, these times aren't that different," I said. "Time to wake up, like America did back then. We've got to listen to the experts, to the scientists who warn us of climate change." Pause, then continues. "That's why we walk, to wake people up to what's going on before it's too late." The farmer was thoughtful as he stared at the ground. He glanced up, looked at my walking stick, shook his head slowly, and said, "That makes sense to me." And that story, first articulated in a barn in New Mexico, inspired by my dad and a hickory walking stick made by monks, became my core message during the rest of the march. I shared that message hundreds of times over the next 2,000 miles. It almost always resonated, a reminder of the power of stories in communicating with people about a crisis as urgent and yet intangible as climate change. One thing that really impressed me about the march is we've got great people in this country, and this divide that is always being discussed and thrown in our faces, the red versus the blue, the Republicans versus the Democrats, the urban versus the rural, when you really immerse yourself in a community, you find that that divide is pretty artificial, and that really we all have a lot more in common than the news media and the political establishment want us to believe.
Well, now, marches are really something that has developed into your thing. There's the Climate Justice March, the First Nation Climate Justice March. You're involved with Bold Iowa. What is that organization?
Well, Bold Iowa is a group focused. We grew out of the battle against the Dakota Access Pipeline, and our focus is to try to build coalitions that you don't normally expect. So we've worked hard to develop an alliance with landowners and farmers who might not, you know, share my own personal concern about climate change, but they understand the value of their land and their water, and also the importance of respecting property rights and not letting eminent domain be misused. So that was kind of the early constituency group that we tried to build an alliance with between environmentalists, landowners, farmers. And we've since really broadened that to with a strong focus on Native American leaders. We have some incredible leaders in this state who are doing amazing work, and we've built a strong alliance with them as well. Right now, I'm trying to work to establish a stronger rapport with labor unions, because labor unions and everyone else were on the opposite sides of the Dakota Access Pipeline issue, and we really think we should be together and have a lot more in common. And so I've been working with some of Iowa's labor leaders to try to find out how we can do a better job at working together in the future and not find ourselves on opposing sides of something as important as a privately owned export oil pipeline.
Well, what I'm getting from you, Ed, is that you're a pretty moderate person when it comes to being open to other people and inviting them in, and being non-confrontational in terms of seeking some sort of rapport with people who might differ with you in opinions. I salute that. That's a great idea. But I'm really glad to hear that in your experience in marching and meeting people across the country, that you really didn't see the sharp divide that we see so publicly display in the media. So that's encouraging me to hear you say that, Ed.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly differences, but I think when you look at the really important stuff, a safe food supply, clean water, affordable health care, all those things, an infrastructure that serves people well, whether it's roads, bus lines, trains, all that stuff, that matters to people. And I think it isn't an issue of, where you're from or what your political party is.
Well, I think the phrase that comes to mind that I grew up hearing a lot was the common good. What happens for the common good? What sort of rapport can we have to agree upon things that are important to each and every one of us? And how can we cohabitate and work together and collaborate to make things happen that indeed are for the common good? Because the polling data I've seen is that most people endorse a lot of these ideas, even though their politics might differ. The polling really shows that people support a lot of this stuff,
Yeah.
That has to be encouraging.
Yeah, and you know, part of the problem is you've got such a and politically there's dominance of two political parties, and that kind of shuts out a lot of alternative voices and ideas. And then you've got a media situation where a very few large corporations control most of newspapers, most of the TV stations, and it's even more pronounced in the realm of radio. So that's why a station like KHOI is so important, and that's why I'm a sustaining member, supporter of KHOI. I donate $25 every month, and I hope more people will begin to do that, because it's incomparable how valuable having a community-owned station, or even a local commercial station that has an investment in the community. We don't see that a lot anymore. A lot of these, the majority of broadcast signals are controlled by a couple really, really big corporations that have no connection to Iowa other than they own all these signals. And that's not good for democracy. It's not good for our community health and well-being, or for that matter, for our economy. So I hope more people think about the value being a sustaining member of a station like KHOI.
Paul?
Yes.
Ed is here with us live, and to continue that conversation.
Yes, I did. Good to see you.
Yes, Ed. I'm sorry only here by phone, but it's an honor to talk with you. And I know what you're about, and you have a lot of cohabitation with us on those issues, I think. So, pleasure to be with you today.
Likewise, yeah.
And when you talk about radio, and when you talk about conglomerates owning a large number of radio stations, that's certainly true in our area. When I grew up, we had KSO, KH, we had KIOA, KRNT, all these stations that were in the Des Moines area, and they were really competing with each other. Now they're owned by one conglomerate. One radio group owns all of those. And of course, there were many mom and pop radio stations, I would call them, very local community radio stations. And we've really gone to vertically integrated, like a lot of things. It's true in broadcasting too, and in radio, and that's why KHOI is going to be increasingly more unique and more useful and crucial to people, I think.
Yeah, and I totally agree, and it's we have a long ways to go to unwind the damage that's been done, you know, starting back during the Reagan administration with the abolition of the Fairness Doctrine, and then the, you know, gradual erosion of the need for equal time. And then the structure now we have, of course, you have commercial radio, which can do whatever it wants. It can, I mean, the one thing that all different types of radio have in common is you can't swear. You get fined pretty badly if you do. But you've got, you've got commercial radio, which can say, you know, where Sean Hannity can for 4 years or 8 years call, you know, just blast Obama. Literally, tell people to vote for the other person. But you can't do that on community-owned stations. A whole different set of rules that restrict, you know, what you can do. But the biggest problem is, of course, the 1996 Telecommunications Act, which Democrats supported. I mean, Bill Clinton signed that bill, and yet what happens when it passes is you've got a scenario now where a handful, just a couple, three companies, own nearly all the large signals. And so it takes incredible initiative on the part of local people who want to have some, want to have some local control over the airwaves, and also an ability to provide more balanced programming. It takes an incredible amount of effort and money to do that. And it's just amazing to me that KHOI folks in Ames have been able to pull that off. It's not easy. And to keep it sustained, I mean, it's been going
8 years. And I'd like to speak to that because I was part of getting it on the air. And the reason was because Ursula Rudenberg was working for Pacifica Radio. And Pacifica was really watching when the FCC opened their very last application window for full power radio stations. And they opened it at the same time that a lot of these established stations were going digital, because then they could, with the same signal, somehow broadcast four different shows from four different places. And so she said, Ames doesn't have a signal, and you could apply and get one, but it's very tricky. And yes, it was very tricky. That's why we're Story City Ames, because if there was somebody else applying from Ames, we'd have to be bumped down in line. But if we could get someplace that didn't have a station and was applying, like Story City, then we'd be farther up on the list. There are all these games we had to play. We literally had to have our own lawyer, not just for us. Pacifica had arranged for this wonderful lawyer to help stations like ours be able to navigate the bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. And then we had a grant we could apply for, and that was very, very important. Yeah,
I would hope it would be on the Biden and Harris presidential agenda to revisit the 1996 Telecommunications Act. Again, it has done immense damage to freedom and democracy element of media coverage here. And there's a really good film I'd recommend that Kathy and I just saw recently called The Brainwashing of My Dad. And it kind of chronicles how all these things transpired to create a media environment, which kind of basically provides this bubble that you get into, and that's all you consume. And, you know, people tend to think about Fox News. It's these radio stations owned by these big media conglomerates that are doing the worst damage with programming. People will recognize some of the names, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Michael Savage, Glenn Beck, Mark Levin. These talking heads are all far right. They're not traditional conservative voices. They're far right. They're radical right. And they completely dominate the airwaves. And I know a bit about this from personal experience. And when the Fallon Forum first started, we were on WOW 98.3. It was a large station. It covered about a third of the counties in Iowa. And nearly all the programming, in 24 hours, there were 4 hours of non-radical right talk. And that was an hour of me and 3 hours of a guy named Chris Bradshaw, a very talented young man. And most of our audience was typically pretty right, pretty conservative. So, but we provided a balance. We provided another perspective. And yet when a bigger conglomerate came in and bought that station, they threw us off immediately. And their argument was, well, we want some consistency in our programming. So they weren't interested in balance. They weren't interested in fairness. They weren't interested in diversity of viewpoints. They wanted, quote, consistency. They wanted all their talking heads to be of the same cookie cutter model. And they got it. Interestingly, the person that I replaced in that time slot of 7 to 8 p.m. on weekdays was Michael Savage. And we found that our ratings, according to Nielsen, our ratings went up after we replaced Savage. So, you know, they weren't interested in a better program. They weren't interested in diversity or fairness or balance. They were interested in this consistent far-right radical voice. And that's created this situation where, you know, if that's what you listen to during the day when you're working with your hands, when your ears are available, but your hands are doing something else, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of workers, a lot of people driving trucks, working in the fields, working in factories. You listen to that, you get the same imbalanced message over and over again. And that's what I really hope the Biden administration will take a crack at trying to reform the Telecommunications Act, because it has caused immense damage. I think you could say that it's a big part of why we have this dysfunction that has led to somebody like Donald Trump being a viable candidate for president.
Exactly. I think that it becomes almost a propaganda mechanism. I grew up here on the farm, and we always had WHO on, the Clear Channel Voice of the Middle West. Of course, there were a limited number of stations who could broadcast at 50,000 watts. They were called Clear Channel. And when everyone else powered down at sundown, those stations could be heard nationwide. And so this was a flagship station here in Iowa. And they had a variety of programming, a lot of music, a lot of entertainment. Of course, there were a lot of radio shows in those days, like The Shadow and Lone Ranger. And Herb Glambeck, who was really the farm guy, he later became a good friend of mine through weird circumstances I won't go into. But they were stars, and
our cows love WHO. The radio was on all the time until the day our cousin came from California and turned on a local jazz station from Des Moines. And the cows got very disturbed. And Dad said, turn it back to WHO. Our cows like WHO.
That's hilarious, but I'm not sure the cows are a good judge of quality music.
Yeah, right. But the main thing is that that station, which was such a, to me, such a great station, has really become Trump radio. And that's very discouraging because the immense variety and great respect that that station had, it's just, I think of it as the Clear Channel, Voice of the Middle West, they always used for their station break. And now it just seems to be a channel for Rush Limbaugh and the boys, and I am really disappointed in that kind of evolution of the station. You know?
It is not just sad, it is wrong. It is not consistent with our values of providing a free flow of information. I mean, you remember a lot of towns, including Des Moines, including small towns, used to have a newspaper with a Republican perspective or a newspaper with a Democratic perspective. And they tended to balance each other out and provide, you know, opportunity for people to think about various perspectives and come to their own conclusion. You don't have that anymore. Right. And your point about WHO is exactly right. It has gone from being something that provided some diversity of programming to, you know, pretty much a consistent far-right talking head, you know, agenda.
I'm going to break in here because I know we do have some regulations. One of them is that we are supposed, it's not the fairness doctrine. We don't have to have somebody from both parties. But if we possibly can, we have to have, and we work hard to get Republicans to, candidates to speak. And if you don't hear very many, it's because most of them just turn us down. Mm-hmm. We try to develop a good relationship with the Republican, local Republican parties. And in fact, really like very much the Story County Republicans. They always respond to us. Candidates don't always want to come to us. And the other thing that I'm a little nervous about is we have some, I think even the big stations have some regulations about talking about other radio stations. Somebody saying to a guest, you can say that, we can't say that. You know, we can't talk about another station in a negative way. And so I just want to caution you that we're up for reapproval. So we try to, you know, watch our P's and Q's and not advocate. We can't advocate for anything. Advocate for anything that we get money for. So, for example, if we get money for a show at CY Stevens, I think we can't say, you've got to go and see that show, because that's not allowed. So I'm just throwing that out. It's pretty weak, but we still have some regulations that could get us thrown off the air. I'd like you to describe Fallon Firm, because that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on, is to give a little promo for Fallon Firm for people who might not be listening in the afternoon now and might want to hear you.
Well, again, what we've been doing is pretty unprecedented because it's such a challenge. Again, the forum started out on a big talk show, a big station, as I mentioned. And when we got kicked off of that after 3 years, we reincarnated on a web-based service. And for various reasons, that did not go particularly well. And then we were for 5 years on a Spanish-speaking station. We were the only hour of English in the entire week, but it worked really well. It was a chance to promote that station to a different audience, and it gave us a chance to have a presence on the airwaves. It was a smaller station, of course, and again, like Paul was saying earlier, it was headquartered. The tower was outside of Des Moines, quite a ways. So in Des Moines itself, you could hear the station. It was stronger on the west side of Des Moines than the east side, but it was one way to keep the conversation going. And now we've created a new situation where we've got a studio in my home, and it's just it's working really, really well. And so the forum now is on two stations in Iowa. stations in New Mexico, Louisiana, Missouri, Ohio, and then it may be popping up in other places as well through the Pacifica network. I'm not sure. And we also try to live stream some segments of the program and then have it available as a podcast on the Fallon Forum's website. The challenge is, again, we have this situation where only a handful of big corporations can own most stations, all the big stations, all the big signals. And then there are, as Susan pointed out, there are different rules governing small stations and big ones. And it is just so blatantly unfair. It's ridiculous. But so, you know, what we tried to do is provide an alternative voice to what you'll find on most radio stations. We've gone from being just programming where we give the entire conversation to one where we have people calling in. And I love the call-in format. Part of the challenge now is technical. How do you create the call-in opportunity in a home-based program that is then rebroadcast? That's a challenge. We're working on that. But right now, the way we do it, we've got five segments. Each segment is about 10 minutes long and covers different content. The first segment is always about some update on the climate crisis, because without addressing the climate crisis, nothing else is going to matter. So that's always our first conversation. And then we have three other segments that address lots of things. I mean, a lot of it covers political stuff. Other issues get thrown in there. And the last segment is always with Kathy Burns with Birds and Bees Urban Farm, where we talk about how to turn your yard into dinner. And we have different conversations about various aspects of gardening and urban farming. Last week, we talked about how to raise artichokes in Iowa. We've also done segments where we just do kind of a Q&A where we look at people's questions that we find online and then try to answer those. We talked about building coal frames, various things like that. So it's a diverse program. Right now, that's the format. Starting off with climate, three other issues, concluding with urban farming. And it seems to be a format that is attracting more appeal. We've seen our mailing list grow from 7,600 to 8,200 just this year. So we like the format. We may continue to tweak it to try to make it more interesting. One thing I will say, and this is to your point, Susan, is I don't want cookie cutter guests. I want people who can come in and have an energetic conversation about something that might have some controversy to it. I think that's healthy. And that's one thing that you don't see a lot of on larger stations owned by these big corporations. So, for example, the panel discussion that people will hear on KHOI later today, I have tried to get somebody from the Republican Party to join that, and they have refused. They haven't called me back, put it that way. But 2 weeks ago, we had Rick Abasu, a columnist with the Des Moines Register, Dr. Charles Goldman, and Pasha Morgan, who's been very active with the Black Lives Matter movement, and Kathy Burns, join me for a conversation to analyze the election. And we'll be doing something similar today at 4 o'clock, 2 weeks later, to say, okay, here's where we're at now. Here's where things are likely to go forward. We want to get into the discussion about violence versus nonviolence, because there's been a lot of conversation about that. And again, with the most recent and one of the most local concerns there is the ISU Republicans saying it is time to, quote, arm up. Fairly broad student body and faculty response pushing back against that. But those kind of digressions into considering violence as an appropriate response to your discontent with something that's happened politically or something that's happening more broadly with an issue you care about, you know, that's a genuinely important conversation, and we're going to have that. The other conversation we'll have today is what happens next with the Democratic Party and, you know, for the Republican Party for that matter. But the truth is, even though the Democrats won the presidency, they took a lot of hits. Everything else was pretty much a mess for the Democratic Party, from the U.S. Congress to the state legislative level. It was not a pretty scene if you were an active Democrat. And so what does that mean? What does the future look like for the Democratic Party? There are those who say, well, we just want to stay focused on that coalition of the cities and the suburbs and to heck with rural America. There are those who say that's a really bad idea. And so that's one element of the conversation we'll have on today's program as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting because after every election cycle, both parties seem to have to reevaluate what's going on based on
the results of that election. And you've just made a very good point about what tasks the Democrats face. Well, the Republicans have some questions too, because the issue for them is, without Trump in the presidency, how powerful is he in the party that exists after the election? Is he still going to have such a pervasive influence, or do more basic traditional conservative people take over the party or oppose him? That's going to be an interesting dynamic too on the Republican side. So,
yeah, 70 plus million people voted for Donald Trump. A big question is how many of those were just votes against Biden, just votes for any Republican. How many of those people are really true dyed-in-the-wool Trump supporters who would get behind him in a heartbeat if he tries to, if he decides to run in 2024? And, you know, does he have enough clout within the base of the party to push out any other Republican that might be interested in taking a shot at the 2024 presidency?
Yeah, it just points out that both parties are more diverse than we think. You know, we tend to do silo thinking about identities too.
Right, right. You know, look at the Latino vote. I mean, the Latino vote was considered a Democratic voting bloc. That's not the case anymore. Just as my, you know, my, when my Irish ancestors came over here, came over less than 100 years ago, the Irish pretty much voted Democratic. That's not the case anymore. The second and third generation Irish are all over the board in terms of who they support, which party they support, which candidates support, what issues they feel strong about. And so, yeah, the base of each party is diverse, and it is evolving. It is changing. And that's something that I think Democrats have failed to recognize. Maybe Republicans have failed to recognize it as well.
But I'm concerned, too, about the Iowa State students. The old saying about free speech extends to the point where you don't shout fire in a crowded theater. You know, at what point does free speech become insightful to violence? That's the issue, whether on what side of the spectrum you're on. So that was worrisome when I read that, you know.
I hope the response has been effective, both at silencing that kind of talk and also maybe getting those students who said that it was time to arm up, getting them to rethink, you know, what the appropriate response to dissatisfaction with the political result is. And we're going to have some more of that conversation on our program today at 4 o'clock, but it's an important one because we've seen violence wreck a lot of havoc and damage and destruction in this country, and it could escalate. This is the kind of climate where it could escalate. And we need to be ready for that, and we need to think about alternatives to how we deal with our differences.
I think the purpose of having Ed on was to get people to listen to the Fallon Forum, and I think that I hope a lot of people who heard this program will be tuning in at 4 o'clock and hearing a continuation of this. Is this going to be a call-in, by the way, Ed?
No, that's something that we've had in the past and might have in the future, but right now we do not have that capacity.
Okay, well, good. But people can email you questions?
Yes, they can email us questions or, respond. There'll be a Facebook version of it as well, so people are welcome to respond there as well. But
what station is it again at 4 o'clock?
It's on KHOI 89.1.
Oh, okay.
That's why we're doing it. That, and besides, we always enjoy having Ed on. But he was walking across the country, I remember. He'd literally have to pull out of the wind to talk to us, but he would do it.
That was kind of crazy.
By the way, I'd like to give a little plug. I took a little clip from at the beginning of this discussion. Ed, why don't you tell us about the book?
Well, the book that came out of the walk, I had not planned on writing a book, but after the march, I said, this is something it would feel good to me to get this down. It might be interesting to folks as well, and it might be another way to encourage people to get active on climate change. And yeah, so the book is called Marcher, Walker, Pilgrim. It's my memoir from the 2014 Great March for Climate Action. It's very personal. Some say it gets too personal at times, but I felt that was important to be candid about all the different elements of the march that were present internally, just to the difficulties of actually walking every day, the beauty of the experience, coming into contact with so much amazing topography in this country and so many amazing people as well. And so one thing that's kind of gone on hold this year is we had scheduled a lot of talks. In February, I gave talks in Pensacola, Tallahassee, Sarasota, Miami. And we were scheduled to give talks in Illinois and Iowa and other places. And then all that got derailed because of COVID. So I'd like to, one thing we're talking about is when COVID passes, to go back to scheduling other speaking engagements, because the message is pretty strong. I had some really good responses. I remember giving a talk in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh, and a young man came up and said, well, I just don't have any hope. I'm really not inclined to buy your book even. So I talked him into it, and he bought it and read it and wrote back. And he said, you know, I've really been inspired to use my writing skills to start talking more about climate change. And there was a guy from Ohio who said, you know, I read your book and it inspired us to put solar panels on our roof. I've had other people say, I read your book and I didn't like it.
For our listeners, we can tell you that we have made a one-hour program based on the interviews that we had with Ed as he walked along the way. And we have a couple of complimentary books from Ed to be given to new sustaining members. So if you become a sustaining member and you're interested in Marcher Walker Pilgrim, just mention it. We can make the book available to you. We have one more important announcement. Earlier, I mentioned that the Plantorium session that was scheduled for tonight, November 18th, has been canceled because of COVID. And since then, we have learned that the other Plantorium session, Stranger Than Fiction, has also been canceled for the same reason.
But this is Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, Story City Ames, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts for today have been Gina McAndrew, Susan Franzen, and Paul Wearson. Our guest was Ed Fallon, host of the Fallon Forum.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories.
Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Thank you, Mike. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, performed by the Beatles tribute band Rocky Raccoon. Local Talk is a program by and for the community.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friend.
Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.